You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You are now entering the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast, a show that uncovers what's fact, what's fake, and what's fun in the crazy world of pseudo-archaeology. Hello and welcome to the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast, episode 183. I'm your host, Dr. Andrew King Kella, and tonight, the 91st annual meeting of the Society for American Archaeology in San Francisco 2026, an overview. So hey all, welcome back, and I just freshly got finished attending the SAA meetings, right? The Society for American Archaeology meetings. This year, they were in San Francisco, the general location of my birth. They were from April 29th until May 3rd. Funnily enough, I'm actually recording this on May 3rd. They're still going. But as a classic cliche academic, I've only gone for part of the meetings and then I left. And those sad fools who are there Sunday morning, that's brutal. I feel for them. I have been them. But the times you're not them, you can leave Saturday night. So I have to be honest with you guys. I don't go to too terribly many academic conferences. They're not exactly my bag. I kind of have, I don't know, maybe the idea of love-hate is too strong, but I understand why they're there. I'm glad they're there, but they're really loud, you know, that in the sort of lobby area, it can just be crushingly loud when there's so many people around. And then there's a ton of talks, right? And really how they go is there'll be a room and they'll be like, oh, the room will hold 40 people, or it'll be a bigger one that can hold like 100 people. You know, it just sort of depends on the size, or 200 people. It depends. There's a lot of variety. But honestly, between you and me, most of the talks I just find really boring. I find that most people are terrible presenters. And as I watch, I'm just like, I could look this up online in 2 minutes, you know, or I could read the book or I could read the article. And it's harsh. I don't mean to be that much of a jerk, but as the years have gone by, and I, being somebody who takes presentation like seriously, it bums me out. You know, I think we can all agree as we get older, our time is a little more precious and we're just a little more honest with ourselves and it makes us a little more bold. And so we'll be like, you know what? I'm not going to sit here quietly for 3 hours watching somebody do a bunch of slides of their potsherds while they read a paper on Marxist philosophies in potsherd organization. Yeah, I don't care in the first place, you know, and it's funny. I was just walking through the halls. It was at the Hilton in San Francisco near, oh God, what's it called? The main square. I always want to say Jack London Square, Union Square, because Jack London Square is in Oakland. You know, the main kind of touristy center area, the kind of, you know, the place where everyone goes on New Year's Eve, that general area. So it was there. That hotel, by the way, the Hilton, I've been to conferences there once or twice before. It's completely confusing. Like, it's so odd. I think they have two towers or something. And there's three elevators. And the elevators go to like different places and you think it goes to one place, but it doesn't. I'm telling you guys, I'm not a fool in terms of how to get places, but damn, dude, even with a map, it's like, how do I get to this level or floor or building? It's funny. It's really confusing. So I guess I'll just take you guys through, you know, my experience there and sort of what I think and what I did, and that'll be that. So yeah, I'm glad they do these, but I'm just not the hugest fan. What I usually do is I try and jet up for a day. I only go to meetings that are physically close, meaning like in my state. I'm in California. When they're in San Francisco, I'm lucky enough to be able to stay at my parents' house, which is in the East Bay. It's always funny going over to San Francisco because people who are not from the Bay Area, what they don't realize is San Francisco is where like rich people go, right? In my mind, I think it's probably very similar to New York, like Manhattan versus the outer boroughs. So I haven't done any of the stuff that you're supposed to do when you're a tourist. I don't think I've ever rode a cable car. I've never been to Alcatraz. And I've just, people were asking me what they should do, you know, because I was local and I'm like, I don't know, just walk around. I told them to walk out on the Golden Gate Bridge because I find that to be fun. And I do find just walking around being fun. And actually, there's a lot of good food in San Francisco that's not too terribly expensive, especially if you're from kind of out of state or from far away. That can be kind of a treat. That can be fun. But I always have that East Bay vibe towards San Francisco. You know, I'm from the East Bay, dude. I don't go here. You know, I'm the Oakland A's, not the Giants. What is this? So I get there and I take BART over. So BART is the Metro. Some people call it the Metro. And I'm like, you are not from here. This is BART. Okay. And I used to take BART all the time in like the 80s when I was a kid. You know, when I was like 12 or 14, I'd take BART to Berkeley to try and be cool and go to the comic book shops because that's cool. But I took BART to, you get off at the Powell Street station and it's all right there. And so that was easy for me. I didn't have to park. I didn't have to stay at the hotel, none of that crap. So I walked in. And it's like they always are. There's lots of people, you know, there's kind of a lot of hubbub. And I saw a handful of friends. And that's always nice. That is the nice part about going to these meetings. As I went through the couple days that I was there, I saw colleagues of mine, you know, that I hadn't seen in a while. Colleagues of mine that are local, but I just hadn't seen in a while. And it's just so fun to just kind of chat and catch up and, you know, and bitch about your various, what's going on behind the scenes. That's super enjoyable. I love seeing those guys. That's really nice. I also saw a bunch of my old students and that was fun too, to see like how successful they're being or what they're doing or how far they are in college or they're getting a new academic job or whatever it may be. That part was really great and really satisfying, you know, when you see those guys being successful. So it was great. It was great seeing them. The first day, I was there on Thursday. These meetings are usually like a Wednesday to Sunday affair, where Wednesday is just like for people on the board or whatever. And then Thursday, Friday, Saturday are kind of the heavy days. And then Sunday is kind of a leftover day. But Thursday, I was part of this media outreach like presentation. And it was called, I have my little handout here. It was called Breaking Silos, Building Audiences: Archaeology, Science Communication, and Public Engagement in the Age of Misinformation. And the woman who ran this, Suanna Crowley, she was really cool. And I got in touch with her last year because they did this, a version of this last year. And I think I bitched and moaned about it a little on here. I can't remember, but I wasn't happy with what they were talking about. Their conclusion last year was that archaeologists should post on LinkedIn more. That's how to get to the people, you know, which I thought was just asinine and crazy. So Suanna and I have an ongoing joke about LinkedIn, right? And I don't hate LinkedIn. Don't get me wrong. I had to do this with her several times. It was really funny. I'm happy with LinkedIn. I'm a member of LinkedIn. LinkedIn has its place. It's super useful for people getting jobs, forming groups in the academic world. It is super not useful for reaching out to the general public. If you're an archaeologist and want to reach out to the general public, do a podcast like I'm doing right now. Do a YouTube channel like I'll do later today. You know, go on television, interact with the media. That's how to reach normal people, not on LinkedIn. Although I'm happy with LinkedIn. Anyway, I was a member of this. And this time they had this little group of panelists, and it was me. It was Milo Rossi, otherwise known as Mini Minuteman. And I've talked about him once or twice before. We've interacted a handful of times. Milo's super cool. Just, he's the coolest cat, man. I just dig that guy. And then Sarah Hoffman. Sarah worked a little bit more in the publishing side of things. And so Milo and I were pretty similar, you know, overall in terms of what we thought and our experiences. And we were kind of like the kind of peas in a pod on what we would talk about. Sarah was different because she did the more kind of print media, news media, almost kind of side of things. And so that was really interesting. I really enjoyed what she had to say. There were also new co-chairs of the SAA Committee for Media Outreach, Jessica Cook-Hale and Ryan Collins. And both those guys were really cool too. And they brought maybe a bit more of a CRM vibe to it or a professional vibe. And that was super great too. I really enjoyed what they had to say, you know, kind of what to do if you're running a big project in a downtown city and you're starting to look bad in the media, or how to interact with the media, or how to interact with the general public who just keeps walking by. Like, that was cool. So the three of us kind of gave our presentation. And by presentation, I just mean we answered a bunch of questions and sort of riffed on a bunch of questions. Suanna introed the whole thing. And to give you a feeling, I have some of the questions here. We answered stuff like, how do you define misinformation and pseudoscience? How do you identify an audience? How does brand strength or individual thought leadership combat or impact misinformation? You know, what is a media crisis and how do you know when you're in one? I thought that was like pretty good. What's the role of trust working with the media? And then, of course, at the end, you know, what's the one thing you wish you knew and you were starting to interact with the media? So these are just, you know, general questions that Suanna would throw out. And she did a great job as moderator, kind of making it real even and spreading the wealth throughout as we talked. And I thought it was great. We all gave our angles on this stuff. You guys have heard me so many times. You could probably do my answers for me, you know, on this kind of stuff. I talked a lot about being bold and fearless in your presentations, being lighthearted, not using jargon. You know, do I even have to say this to this audience at this point? I don't think so. I don't think I have to say this to you guys at all. But we do have to say this to the everyday archaeologists. And that's the part that's a bummer, where the meeting was fairly lightly attended, meaning this talk. And it's the people who need to see this never show up. They think it's beneath them. They think Marxist approaches to trial maintenance is much more important than learning about how to do media outreach. You know, it's beneath them. They're too busy on pot shirt analysis that only they understand, with a Marxist angle, of course. So that part's a bummer, but the audience who was there was very positive. They're very cool. And I was, again, overall really happy about it, really happy about talking about pseudoscience, what to do with it. Milo has great perspective on this, you know, dealing with that. He does such a good job. If you guys, I'm sure many of you have probably seen his Mini Minuteman YouTube channel. He does long form, he does some short form, you know, but just combating pseudoscience. And the other thing I always say is, this is trench warfare, man. It's just about numbers. We need more people to do this. We need more people to talk real archaeology in public outlets. That's it. Real archaeologists talking about real archaeology in public outlets, right? And that was really the theme. And afterwards, Suanna talked about us maybe doing some sort of publication on this, right? Everyone writing up kind of their own experience on this. I'd be really into that. The only thing I fear is, in my old ancient age and with my experiences, I've become really bold, you guys. I'm guessing you're shocked about that. And I'm like, would they even publish what I had to say? You know, I don't know, but I will be. If we write something, I promise you guys, I will be fearless. I will be critical, but not cruel, but straightforward, straight shooting, and no bullshit. When we come back, more of my thoughts on the 91st annual SAA meetings. Hello, and welcome back to the Pseudo Archaeology Podcast, episode 183. And we have been talking about the 91st annual SAA meetings in San Francisco. And I had just previously talked about the panel that I was a part of, and it was about, you know, misinformation in archaeology and pseudoscience, what we fight against and laugh about in equal measures here on the Pseudo Archaeology Podcast, and, you know, just how to combat that. As Thursday went forward, so that took a couple hours, and that's fine, and that's great. In the later afternoon, I went to a memorial party for one of my old professors, my professor Mike Glassow, who was quite well-known California archaeologist, and his wife, Annabelle Ford, who I work with all the time on the Maya stuff. She and one of the other archaeologists, Lynn Gamble, organized it. And, you know, sadly and interestingly, I went to two remembrances. Remembrance? I don't know. Two of them. this time around. I went to Mike's on Thursday night, and then on Saturday afternoon, I went to Brian Fagan's. So both of these guys have passed away recently. So for Mike's, it was at the like rooftop bar in the Hilton. It's like this really nice, just exactly how you would think. Way up, you know, the 49th floor or whatever it is. And you get out at the top and it has this sweeping views of San Francisco and you're there. And it was a very simple affair, right? There's just a handful of like finger food and then you could get a drink, which I got a rum and coke because that's all I drink. And then that was great. It was just talking to colleagues. It was pretty intimate. And by intimate, I mean, you know, maybe there were 30 people there milling around, that kind of thing. And it was real nice. It was just, it was really cool. And so we did the thing where we all told stories, like everyone kind of had to tell a story. Annabelle, if anything, pressured people into telling a story about Mike, which I actually thought was great. Because I think so often when somebody passes away and they have a little memorial, people want to speak. They have a little story they want to say, but they're really frightened. And just do it, man. If you're at a memorial service, you have some little silly story, just tell it, because it's not for the dead, it's for the living, you know? And I told a little story. I think it went over well. But you know what? If you tell a story and it goes over terrible, who cares? You know, doubly so. First, they're dead. They won't care. Secondarily, the audience you're talking to should be relaxed enough to let it go. You know, and realize we're all sort of grieving this. And if we all need to tell our own personal story, just tell that sucker, you know, just tell it. So we did that and we were there, I don't know, an hour and a half or something, and, you know, seeing old friends and that kind of thing. So that was really great. And just kind of remembering Mike in kind of just a lighthearted, fun way. That was really well done. Skipping forward, I guess, and actually speaking of people passing away. So that was Thursday evening at the SAs. I did not go on Friday. As I said, I'm staying at my parents' house. My mother passed away recently. I might have touched on this on one of the other podcasts, but it was unexpected and it was, you know, really shocking. And so my brother and I are coming up to my mom's house a lot to clean it out and this kind of thing. But it did give me an excellent base of operations to go into the city and go to the SAAs. And as a side note, if you're from the Bay Area, you call San Francisco the city, right? That's just what it is. Oh, are you going into the city? So there's that. And also, funnily enough, I'm actually recording this in my mom's house all alone, you know, on an early morning or early, very foggy, almost rainy morning. So it's kind of weird, you guys. I'm just here, like it's just my voice echoing through a totally empty house. A house I grew up in, you know? Maybe I'll do something. Maybe I'll do some podcast on it later. It has its own archaeology almost. It's a craftsman. Maybe I'll do that. We'll see. Maybe my mom needs to haunt this house so I can have some pseudo-archaeology component to it. Come on, Mom. Hook me up. It's all for the show. So I went to Mike's memorial. I have my mom on my mind. And then on Thursday afternoon, I went to Brian Fagan's. And I have talked about Brian Fagan before on here. I believe it's podcast 167. Could be a little off. But I talked about what an influence he was. Strangely enough, both these guys were an influence on me, right? Mike was very important too. But for Brian's memorial, Brian had one where they had a room actually in the meetings and people gave like PowerPoint presentations, you know, on Brian. And there was a lot of people from like the book world because Brian was such a super well-known archaeology writer, you know. And so they covered that. They covered his career. So it was a bit more organized than Mike's, you know, and it was super nice too. Brian's wife, Leslie, was there, and she just couldn't have been nicer. She actually brought a little booze for people to drink and some donuts. I was like, oh my God, that's so nice. You know, you're the wife and you're bringing the stuff. You know, it's like, oh man. As archaeologists, we need to be less oafish sometimes. Like, hey, maybe we should bring the booze and the donuts and maybe let Leslie relax. But that was, again, she's just so, so very kind. And that was, again, really fun too, just reminiscing. I learned about Brian Fagan's early life. I'd known moments of it. And one thing that was really nice for me is I'd heard certain stories over the years about Brian, and 2/3 of him from his mouth, like from him. And I'd heard them so long ago that I was unsure. Some stuff about Mortimer Wheeler, this gets very esoteric, ancient history, archaeology, but I'd heard this. And if you'd asked me about some of the Brian Fagan stories, I'd be like, I'd swear to God I heard this, but I have no idea if it's true. And it was great that some of the speakers, including Leslie, she spoke too, including Brian's wife, they told some of these stories or aspects of these stories I heard before. And I was like, oh, thank God. Okay, I'm not crazy. I did indeed hear that story in 1991, you know. So that was really nice. And again, that one was more organized at first. But then afterwards, it was less organized. And we could just sort of speak our little story, just like at Mike's, you know. And I told a very short story just about how much Brian Fagan had influenced me. And it was basically that I had him talk, you know, years and years later, like when I was a full professor, I'd had him talk at, for one of my classes at Moore Park for the Egyptology class. And he gave his Egyptology lecture. This was about 2018, maybe 2017, I don't know. But it's my favorite one. I love it when he does his Egyptology lecture. It's just so awesome. It's just, to me, it's just the greatest hits, you know. It's like the Rolling Stones have to play Satisfaction and Brian Fagan has to do the Egyptology lecture. And so he did it and it was great. It was just like I thought, and it was fantastic. And it was a great day. But afterwards, like the next day or two later, I asked the students, I'm like, hey, you guys, what was your favorite part? What'd you like about the Brian Fagan lecture? And the main thing they agreed on, they said, hey, Kinkella, man, it was watching you. And I was like, what? And they're like, yeah, man, it was watching you. You were so excited to watch Brian Fagan. You were like his biggest fan, dude. And it was like really emotional for me when they said that. I was like, oh my God, because I realized when Brian Fagan was there, and this is, you know, this at this point is the better part of 30 years after I had him as a professor, 25 years. And I realized in that moment, watching him give his Egyptology lecture, I realized two things. First, that it was just like I was 18 again. It was like time melted away and I was an 18-year-old student watching my professor do his thing. And at the same moment, I also realized I'd made it, you know, and that's very deep in that moment when you realize you made it, meaning I was a college professor. I was a version of him. You know, and so that I told that story and it was really affecting for me. I think when I told it, this was just yesterday when I did it, my voice cracked a little bit. I got a little emotional. Oh, I need to ratchet up my machismo, you guys. This is sad. I can't, getting choked up about that. What's wrong with me? Anyway, that was really fun. It's funny. You know, when I think about watching the remembrance for these two people, it was perfect for both of them. And I don't know which style I like better. I have to say the thing that nobody likes. I like them both for different reasons. You know, it's like a cop out, but it's not. I'm like, what would I prefer when I'm dead? What memorial do I want for the Andrew Kinkella Memorial Service? I mean, obviously I want a parade and jet planes, but I liked the intimate getting a drink and everyone kind of be in a circle and tell a story and be forced to tell a story. I really dig that. I've told my daughter when I'm dead, when there's a memorial service, everyone has to say one thing that how life is better on earth now that I'm dead. What's one good thing about me being dead? And I totally want people to do that. I do like the PowerPoint presentation thing too, a little bit. I don't know. I like them both. Maybe I can do without the PowerPoint presentation. It's a tough one. I think I prefer, because one of the most fun parts about the Brian Fagan thing too was afterwards, you know, everyone just hanging out and talking. That was fun too. So maybe I can go PowerPoint free. It's tough. It's hard. Anyway, that was my Saturday afternoon at the SAAs. And when we return to part 3, my final thoughts on the SAAs in San Francisco. Hello and welcome back one more time for the Pseudo Archaeology Podcast, episode 183. And I'm your host, Dr. Andrew Kinkella, and I have been discussing the SAAs 2026. And this final section, I just would kind of give kind of my reactions to it. Again, I was there for Thursday and Saturday. Friday, I was not because my brother and I were spending all day dealing with my mother's affairs. My brother came up, and it's always nice to see him hang out. So yeah, yesterday was my last day there. I left Saturday, you know, the sort of late, very late afternoon, early evening, whatever, right in there. And so what did I take from this? A lot of different stuff. I walked through the bookstore, and oddly, the bookstore was to me a little less rocking than it had been in previous times. I feel like there's less going on. The bookstore used to be so energetic, and it felt a little tired. It felt a little behind. I don't know how to explain it. Is it that stuff like podcasting and, you know, this kind of stuff is overtaking kind of print media in general? I don't know. You know, is it that archaeology is just writing stuff and producing stuff that nobody wants to read? There is that problem. I had a really great experience with Utah Press. There's many press there. They all have little booths, right? And you just walk along and look at their stuff. What I really liked about the Utah Press was they had just old school. It's like they did it old school archaeology. They had old school books. They're recent books, but they're done, to me, in a more old school fashion. It's not all Marxist implications of digging a square hole in the desert, right? It's much more classic, like, here's the excavations from this really interesting archaeology site. You know, no pretense. Like, it just was straightforward. And I really enjoyed that. Like, good for them. Good for you, Utah Press. So I think I bought one book there on a California archaeology site. But, you know, there were a lot of other books out there that I'm just not a fan of. You know, stuff that is way too touchy-feely, way too subjective versus objective, way too theory-based. And you just look at the titles and they're boring as shit. You're like, I don't want to read that, you know? And that's what's, and there seems to be, it's like the academic world is just ever more getting into their bubble. They're so far away. Dear academic world, why do you think not only are there no more jobs in academia, but archaeology departments are actually closing? Because students don't want to hear this interminable shit. Nobody cares. Bring the excitement back in. Oh, you guys. Yeah, it's so, barring Utah Press, a lot of the other stuff was just, you know, academic vomit. Not all. In that same room, there was a little partition, and there was an opening where you could go in, and there was a person standing there, and I'm like, ooh, what's beyond this partition? And you guys, beyond the partition, you could tell that's where the party was. Like, it was loud, a ton of people talking, a ton of positive sounding. So while the bookstore was like, wah, the book area, beyond the partition on the far left side of the bookstore, of the book area, it was the CRM Expo. And the CRM Expo, you guys, was happening. I was like, oh my God, I got to talk about this on the CRM Archaeology Podcast. The CRM Expo, this is the first time in my career where I was like, wow, the energy has shifted. The CRM Expo had a ton of young people. Everyone was joking and laughing. All the booths were interesting. They're all, you know, they were all like trying to get people and have people sign up and, you know, get jobs. And so the CRM world, you guys, is taking off, as I know, because I work some in it. I work with it and I do the CRM Archaeology Podcast. So that was like super awesome. Now, I do want, don't get me wrong, I do want academic archaeology to survive. They are making every wrong move. I don't want them to like shutter or close shop or anything, but I'm like, they're going to have to at some point if they keep being this freaking stupid. But CRM, they're making the greatest moves. If you don't know what that is, it's cultural resource management. That's archaeology for hire, or it's business archaeology, like where if a land developer is making a big new like shopping center or something, and they have to dig up the area, they have to send an archaeology team in to make sure they aren't digging up like Native American remains or this kind of thing. But I was just, I'd never seen that before. I'd never seen that stark contrast. And I wish they were both doing great. But wow, I just, you can tell I was just so happy, surprised. I saw old friends, old students, just like everywhere else, you know, just saying hi. Good for them. Just good for them. Good for the firms, all the firms that showed up to have their little booths. They all had some really fun swag. One firm, I'm sorry, you guys, I don't have it with me. I forgot your name. They had guitar picks, dude. And me as the denizen of the guitar, I'm like, this is the awesomest choice ever. Guitar picks. And just so you guys know, they all have swag of little stickers and stuff archaeologists need, like little rulers or, you know, this kind of stuff. But I thought the guitar picks were awesome. Just a lot of fun, lighthearted, you know, real people talking about real things, not just full of academic bullshit. So, dude, it was great. What else did I notice? Well, on the flip side, I noticed a lot of boring presentations, the names of presentations. And it said, I don't want to out anybody, but I have the program in front of me. Oh, this year, too, they had an app you could also use on your phone. So they had they still do have the paper program, which I have to say, I used the paper program a little more, but the app was really useful. You know, I'm not going to out any, I'm not going to say this paper's super boring. I don't want to do that to anyone. But, you know, when you just see terms like magnesium analysis of soils, you know, identity preservation, neoliberal forced labor, you know, these are from the titles of these presentations. And they're just like, do you want to go watch that? Because I don't. And it just seems like archaeologists still refuse to take the note. What you're talking about is boring as shit. Make it interesting. And that's the sadness, because it is interesting. It is interesting. But they're too chicken to make it interesting. And so they just sit in their academic hovel with these awful titles. Here's one. Narrativity and iconicity. What is narrativity and iconicity? Here's another. Complexity science. What is complexity science? What is this crap? See, that's whenever they're like, they're doing the opposite of what I do. I take out the jargon. They're actually making up jargon. That drives me nuts, you guys, because it's ruining my job, right? My job is to clean the world of jargon. I'm a jargon destroyer, right? And they're just making up this new, you know, the theory of praxis and the blah, blah, blah. Nuts. That's like, it makes me sad. And I guess, you know, this brings me to sort of, how do I feel about the SAA? In general, this time, the short answer is not that bad. It's more archaeology as a discipline than the SAA is, right? I'm more like, archaeologists, you need to get with the game. But the SAA is, it's, you know, they tried. A lot of times they fail in terms of the general public. They did have this little outreach thing to like K-12 students. It was really cool. You could just use your phone and there was a QR code. And it's this very basic, like, what is an artifact? Like a little sheet where you can, like for fourth graders. But that was awesome. So, you know, that's nice public outreach, making this fun little, you know, series of little papers you can download and do little archaeology games. Like that's awesome. That's good for them. But then on the flip side, you just have all these same old boring, you know, look how smart I am. Look how much theory I know. I'm more Marxist than you. Archaeologists, and they need to get with the program. I wish the SAA well. They're doing much better than the AAAs. The AAAs are the American Anthropological Association. Those guys are just like doornail dead. Those guys are insane. I will probably make fun of them later on a full podcast because this is pseudo-archaeology and they do pseudo-anthropology. Not all. I'm not saying they're a pseudoscience organization. They're a real organization, but they've gone off the rails, man. Another story for another time. But with that said, I did enjoy my time at the SAAs. I was happy to see friends. I was happy to see the CRM Expo. I was happy to get together with others and remember some of our colleagues weren't there anymore. And I was able to say hi to San Francisco one more time. Hey, the city where rich people go. It's good to see you again. And I had some good food. Thanks so much for listening to you guys, and I will see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast. Please like and subscribe wherever you like and subscribe. And if you have questions for me, Dr. Andrew Kinkella, feel free to reach out using the links below or go to my YouTube channel, Kinkella Teaches Archaeology. See you guys next time.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. The Archaeology Podcast Network's chief editor is Rachel Roden. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media and newsletter coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. The APN was founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle on December 1st, 2014. We're supported by our amazing podcast hosts, many volunteers, and listeners like you. Check out membership at www.archpodnet.com/members.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.